Anthony Devois is the violist in the Avalon String Quartet, the quartet in residence at Northern Illinois University. The group received a glowing review in the New York Times for its latest recording of works by Benjamin Britten, Debussy, and Stacy Garup, a Chicago composer. It was released in 2015 on CD Records. For their concert at the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck this Thursday and Friday, Anthony told me they've chosen three masterworks from different points in music history.
There's a quartet by Haydn, Opus 76, number 3 in C major, nicknamed The Emperor. And then the second quartet of Leos Janáček, an early 20th century Czech composer. And then the program ends with Beethoven's Opus 131 quartet in C sharp minor. Which is one of his biggest and best, and comes from the last couple of years of his life. And it's a great program because I think it really highlights different ways that the string quartet as a medium played a very central role in the lives of some of the greatest composers. So in the case of Haydn, he's, of course, considered the father of the string quartet. He was the first person to really take two violins, a viola and cello, and make a cohesive entity out of that grouping. And he wrote more than 70 quartets over the course of his life, which is astonishing. And as with all of his music, he was very experimental. And over time, he developed his style into really giving much more equal weight to all the instruments and coming up with really interesting musical features, all four instruments interacting and responding to each other. So he wrote six quartets as his Opus 76, and this is from that set. And I think that set overall represents kind of the pinnacle of what the classical string quartet is. If Haydn was the father of the quartet, Beethoven was maybe the prodigal son of the string quartet, or the prominent son, at least, of the string quartet. He wrote quartets all through the course of his life, and also took the medium in a radically different direction from his early years to his late years. So Beethoven's first quartets from the Opus 18 set are not too different from Haydn's most mature quartets. They really represent classical idealism and perfection. From there, Beethoven took the quartet into steps that would kind of presage the Romantic era in music. And then late in his life, really for the last 2 years of his life, Beethoven turned with almost monk-like devotion to writing string quartets. He took a long hiatus and then turned all his attention, after he finished his Ninth Symphony and had a very successful premiere with that, he turned almost all his attention to string quartet writing. Six of his final nine published compositions were string quartets. All of his major works from his last couple of years were string quartets. In that time, for him, the string quartet became a very personal and intimate expression. And of course, he had been deaf for such a long time already at that point that he never heard a note of what he was writing. It was all something that existed in his mind's ear. And the Opus 131 is a radical break from the form of the quartet. It's really written in one uninterrupted stretch. There are seven distinct sections of it that you could think of as movements, but they run through from one to the next without interruption, and he really creates an unbroken narrative arc and a kind of organic unspooling of this incredible material over the course of 38 minutes of music. And it's deeply personal. It starts out kind of in the pit of despair with a very somber fugue subject, which is in itself a really radical way to start a piece. And over the course of these seven different sections, this kind of sprawling structure to the piece, it arrives at a very defiant and ultimately valedictory conclusion. It's really an emotional journey. Uh, The Janáček piece really occupies a space all its own. Janáček was a Czech composer who came to prominence only late in his own life, and he wrote two string quartets. They're both fascinating pieces and particular favorites of ours as an ensemble. The second string quartet that we're playing is subtitled Intimate Letters, and it tells the story of a love affair that Janáček pursued late in his life, really almost entirely in his head. He developed a real obsession with a woman who lived in his town. She was kind of an ordinary woman, sort of, you know, a housewife with a young son, and she didn't think there was anything particularly special about her, and she had no idea why this older guy had kind of latched on to her. But he wrote, I think, 600 or 700 letters to this woman over the course of several years towards the end of his life, to which she replied with fewer than a dozen letters total, just very perfunctory responses. I guess she didn't want to be completely rude, but she also was not trying to encourage any of his entreaties. So it's called Intimate Letters, but it's intimate not in the sense of hushed and quiet, but in the sense of deeply, profoundly personal and just putting everything out there, leaving nothing concealed. So it's a unique work and very fascinating work. Janáček's compositional style is very fragmentary. He doesn't take a long theme and then spend a long time developing that theme and trying to make it grow organically the way Beethoven does. He takes tiny little fragments that interrupt each other in very very surprising ways and very urgent and immediate ways. And there's kind of even in the slower sections of the music, there's often a chugging motor of little musical motives, punchy little motives that drive the piece along and give it a very propulsive energy, restless energy. It's a unique and fascinating piece.
Oh, that's a great overview of all three pieces on the program. Let's conflate them a little more. For example, Haydn and Beethoven, both sort of continental, very cosmopolitan kind of composers. And I always think of Janáček as different and his writing being different because he grows up in this, or he lives in this sort of hidden area, this Moravian area with the Carpathian Mountains nearby, creates his own distinct language, partly through geography. Would you have anything to say to that?
Yeah, that's an interesting take on it. I mean, he's just very hard to place in the sort of the historical arc of the development of musical style. He himself was very active as a teacher and had pupils who were kind of frustrated with him because his language was so unique that he couldn't really put it into words or into a sort of system that he could impart to them. So a Janáček scholar told me a story of a pupil of Janáček's who wrote about a lesson that he had where they were actually looking at one of Janáček's own scores, and the pupil said, "Now, maestro, what kind of a chord is this? It wasn't major, it wasn't minor, it wasn't a seventh, it was something sort of out of the realm of traditional harmony." And Janáček kind of spelled out the chords and the specific notes and showed the chord and said, "Well, it's a chord like that." And that was the answer. There was no sort of deeper system or more rigorous explanation beyond that he could impart to his student, and then the student left the lesson just kind of more baffled than when he had come in. So, and I think everything about Janáček was kind of enigmatic in that way. Maybe it was partly geography, but I think even within his own realm, within the society that he lived in, I think he was considered a bit of an oddball. Was never really a polite member of society, and I guess in that way, that's similar to Beethoven, who, partly because of his deafness and also just partly because of his own obstinate nature, was really apart from society so much. He was kind of isolated with his work more and more so as he lost his hearing, and developed something that was very unique and very individual and very personal and not really reflective of wider kinds going on around him. I like to think of it that he took steps several decades into the future of musical development before anyone else at the time could see that that's what he was doing. That's kind of what he had done in his later years. And people only really came to appreciate that decades after he passed away. And all the late quartets, especially the Opus 131, really reflect that that aspect of his life and his relationship to the wider musical world at the time.
Right, right. And it is interesting to think that if Haydn had put his genius toward another standard form like the string trio, I might be talking to you as a member of the Avalon string trio rather than quartet.
Right. Well, I mean, that's, you know, that's its own question. Is that something that Haydn did on his own and sort of forced that to come about as a medium, or is there something inherent in the balance of the string quartet that Haydn discovered and sort of showed other people the way, but that one way or another it would have generated as its own form? And I don't know, there's no way to answer that, but that's a great point, that without Haydn, what else might have developed in place of the string quartet, and how lucky we are that that's what he chose to turn his attention to.
For how many years have you been with the Avalon String Quartet?
This is my 13th year with the quartet. The group has been playing for a little over 20 years now. Our two violinists, Blaise Manier and Marie Wong, are both founding members of the ensemble back in the mid-1990s. They started the group. They studied together under the Vermeer Quartet and the Emerson Quartet and the Juilliard Quartet, and then took on their own faculty position at a small campus of Indiana University in South Bend, and that's where I joined them in 2004. And then our cellist, Chenghao Li, joined 2 years after that. So we've been in this current formation for a little over 10 years now.
And you're no longer at school in Indiana. You're at Northern Illinois University, right?
Yeah, we've been the quartet in residence at Northern Illinois University since 2007, upon the retirement of the Vermeer Quartet, who had been in residence there for 37 or 38 years. We were selected to carry on their tradition of quartet playing in DeKalb, Illinois.
Well, I've had the pleasure of talking to and hearing some terrific quartets just in the last few months. Just in the last 2 weeks, I spoke with members of the Escher Quartet and Verona Quartet, and earlier in the year, the Jerusalem Quartet and the Juilliard Quartet. So one thing that occurred to me to ask in one of the prior interviews is, help me as a listener in the audience to pick up on the finer details of a great performance by a quartet. What are you aiming for? What do you hear when you hear a great quartet performance?
That's a fascinating question, because I think different groups go about different priorities in different ways. I think that some people would tell you that the ideal string quartet is one in which you can't differentiate one individual member of the group from another. It just sounds like one blended entity. It sounds like one instrument that's creating a unified sound. But I think there are others, including some very, very highly regarded quartets, who want to emphasize the individuality of the membership just as much as the blended ensemble as a unit. So one of my major influences in quartet playing is the Guarneri String Quartet. I studied with their violist Michael Tree for a couple of years and had chamber music coaching with most of them when I was a student at Curtis. And Michael really, I think his top priority always was the individuality and the uniqueness of a voice being able to project over or through the other voices in the ensemble. It's a fascinating question. And I think the more people listen to different quartets, the more you pick up an appreciation for the way one group emphasizes one priority and another group emphasizes another, and the things that they bring to the same piece of music that makes you hear it in different ways.
Well, let's leave it there for today. I hope you have a terrific performance this week at the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck. Would you tell me about any upcoming concerts where we can also find the Avalon String Quartet?
Sure. So Saugatuck is August 4th and 5th And then the next day, August 6th, we go up to Montague, Michigan, for the White Lake Chamber Music Festival. We have concerts there August 6th and 10th and 13th. So over the next week, we'll be in residence there with three different programs incorporating everything that we're playing in Saugatuck and other repertoire as well.
Well, I guess I would direct listeners to avalonstringquartet.com for the full roster of activities. And
yes, please do.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for talking with me today, Tony.
Okay, thanks, Sarah.